millions of Americans donate or sell their blood plasma, often as a way to make a little extra money on the side. What started as a relatively small industry a few decades ago has grown into a $24 billion global operation with over 1,000 plasma centers across the country, at least a few dozen of them here in Wisconsin by a quick count on Google Maps. The U.S. is one of only 5 countries in the world that allows people to be paid for their blood plasma. In her new book, our next guest shares her own experience on the receiving end of that plasma, and she looks at the problems she sees in the industry, from a disastrous story in China to what she says is a system of exploitation here in the U.S. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you donated plasma for money? What was that experience like? How did it fit into your financial situation? Do you work in one of these many centers around the state? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kathleen McLaughlin is a journalist and author of the new book, Blood Money, The Story of Life, Death, and Profit Inside America's Blood Industry. Kathleen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, Rob, it's nice to be here. Thank you very much.
You're a journalist, Kathleen, so you're interested in this story, but you have a very personal interest as well. Can you talk a little bit about your own experience with what comes out of this industry?
Yeah, of course. It's been an interesting little journey for me because, like you said, I'm a journalist. I've been a journalist for more than 2 decades. So I'm just used to reporting and telling other people's story. But this one is very personal for me. So about 20 years ago, I was diagnosed with a rare autoimmune disease. And the treatment for that illness is periodic infusions of a drug that is made from other people's blood plasma. And over the years, I have spent a lot of time sitting in an infusion chair, to be honest, being really bored. So these drips take about 6 hours and they're quite dull. It's quite dull to be stuck in a chair for 6 hours. And I knew that this drug was made from the plasma parts of many different people. And so I just had this kind of ongoing fascination with who are all these people. I've known people off and on over the years, acquaintances, relatives of friends who have sold plasma, but I've never known that many people. And I knew that there were a lot of people engaged in this practice. I really set out to try and figure out who these people are, why people do it, and how important this has become to people's personal economics. And it's been a really interesting undertaking trying to figure it all out.
We're going to spend most of our time, Kathleen, here in the United States, but I want to start with a kind of a worst case scenario for what was called a plasma economy. You were interested in this because you had reported in China and there were boom towns of plasma there. Can you tell us a little bit about the disaster?
Sure. So I lived in China as a foreign correspondent for 15 years. And I moved there in the early 2000s, which was about a decade after the catastrophe of the plasma economy. So what happened back in the 1990s, China was really trying to figure out all sorts of different endeavors to increase their economy. So every province would come up with different ways that people could make money, you know, that workers could get involved in the system, that profits would grow. It was really turning from a state-owned economy into a capitalist economy. And in one of the poorer provinces called Henan, which is central China, the big idea was what you said, the plasma economy. And that was structuring an entire medical industry around the blood of poor people. So the idea was that farmers in Henan province who had no money, really, I mean, they worked the land and didn't have much beyond that, could get paid for their plasma, and the plasma would get made into life-saving medications like the one that I take, and it could be exported around the world, which seems, you know, like kind of a bizarre idea, but this is what they did. Unfortunately, this was during the period that HIV and AIDS were still quite dangerous and deadly, and HIV got into the domestic plasma extraction system in China, and it was spread through plasma centers and the use of unclean systems. So they were reusing needles, reusing tubing, things like that. And it spread the virus like wildfire. There were tens of thousands of people infected with HIV through plasma donation in the plasma economy in China in the 90s. There's never actually been a proper accounting by the government of how many people were made sick and how many people died. Instead, what happened is the Chinese government pretty thoroughly covered up the details of it and kind of tried to make it disappear from history. Two of the women who were the whistleblowers who uncovered this problem had actually fled to the United States and were living in exile here. And over the years, I got to know both of them pretty well. And one, whose name was Wang Xuping, specifically really encouraged me to look at what was happening in the United States with blood plasma. So I've been kind of explaining to people, I thought it was very dystopian and sci-fi that China had this idea for something called a plasma economy. But the fact is, we created it in the United States. It just hasn't gotten that much attention.
Talking to Kathleen McLaughlin about her new book, Blood Money, the story of life, death, and profit inside America's blood industry. Kathleen, one bit of good news, that disaster in China, it seems like we're much healthier about the system there. The fear isn't so much spreading disease in this system. But that idea of a plasma economy built around poor people, that you see being replicated here in the United States.
That's right. So yeah, just to be clear, there's very little risk to donors in terms of contracting a virus, and especially not HIV. So plasma and blood science have evolved since this all happened in China. And we now know that treating plasma with heat and doing other things while the medication is being made pretty much eliminates the risk of viral transmission of things like HIV. So what happened in China is the odds of it happening here are slim to none. And that's just because medical science has gotten better. But what we have done is the same thing that China did, which is build an industry based on the body parts of poor people. So most of the rest of the world bans the practice of paying people for their blood plasma because it can be seen as coercive. So it's not a purely voluntary donation if you're paying someone for it. There is an element of coercion to it. And ethicists and global health experts around the world have said, you know, this isn't the way that you want to base a system of blood or plasma donation because there's this element of coercion. But we have let this happen in the United States, and we have really let it grow into a massive economy where there is this aspect of coercion. And people who need a little extra money to get by are doing this primarily for financial reasons. So I think there are a lot of ethical questions around it. There are also some health questions around it that I don't believe have been studied appropriately. So I do think that the potential impacts on a person's health long term do need to be better studied. But yeah, for me, the main question is, how do we become this society where people sell their blood to buy groceries? And are we really comfortable being that kind of society?
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jeremy is with us in Mineral Point. Jeremy, hi.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me. I just wanted to share, as a former college student, I lived in Southwest Wisconsin, and I was drawn to donating plasma out of a need to kind of supplement my income as a college student. And so, you know, I was a student who came from a low to no income background. And so I did not slow down and ask questions about plasma and where was it going and what would be the pathway to it helping or being some help to someone. It was mainly a financial necessity to supplement for rising cost of college, as well as, you know, just kind of making up for where I fell short in comparison to some of my classmates.
And Jeremy, can I ask, how often did you donate? People do it maybe once. You can legally do it, I think, up to twice a week.
Yeah. No, I did it, I want to say, maybe once or twice a month. But I will say I was inspired to do it quite more. There's a sort of predatory promotion in Southwest Wisconsin, particularly near the Dubuque, Iowa area. Like, you get incentives to go, you get coupons, you get all sorts of outreach and contact, especially when you enroll. And it's a thing that I see many of my peers get addicted to. But again, it's out of a necessity of shortcoming.
Jeremy, thanks for that call. Kathleen, Jeremy echoing so many of the stories you share in your book.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. I really appreciate it. It is so interesting because college students really are a prime target for this industry. So you will see plasma centers kind of congregate in cities and towns that have big universities and big populations of students like Jeremy who need extra money to get through college. We have made the cost of education so expensive in this country, and we haven't done much to help people with it other than piling on mass amounts of student debt. So in my book, one of the places where I spent a lot of time is a city called Rexburg, Idaho, which has a large university with a lot of kids who are not wealthy. And this is one of the most popular ways for them to, get extra money to buy groceries and books and pay rent and things like that. It's really, really common for college students to engage in this. And I've heard, some people who are sort of dismissive about the concerns of what this does to people kind of write it off as saying, oh, it's just college students. But to me, I actually think that it's pretty important to think about what we're asking of a 19-year-old to sell a part of their body, if that's really something that we should be doing.
Jeremy, thanks for that call. Kathleen, Jeremy also mentions that pay incentive structure and the coupons. This is, he said it was in southwestern Wisconsin. This is a very common part of the industry. Can you talk about how that works?
Yeah, totally. So the way the industry works and the way the system is designed is to get people to come back as often as possible. And so you'll get paid more for the second donation in a week. You'll get year-end bonus, or I'm sorry, month-end bonuses. You'll get coupons. You'll get a bonus if you refer a friend to donate plasma. So the entire payment structure, even though it is framed as a token of appreciation for your time, not an actual payment per se. So they're very careful with the language because the industry does not want this to be regulated as an act of labor. So they're careful with the language, but it is entirely structured around incentives to keep you coming back and donating as often as possible. So if you go the maximum number of times, you can actually sell plasma 104 times a year, which is really an incredible amount. And there are people who are able to do this physically, and they get the most financial rewards from it.
We're talking to journalist Kathleen McLaughlin about her new book, Blood Money: The Story of Life, Death, and Profit Inside America's Blood Industry. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how this works? Have you sold plasma yourself now or at some point in your life? How did that fit into your personal economy? Do you use one of these medications that comes out of this industry? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up the conversation about selling blood plasma with Kathleen McLaughlin. She's a journalist and the author of the new book, Blood Money: The Story of Life, Death, and Profit Inside America's Blood Industry. You can join in maybe with your own experiences or your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Before we go back to our callers, Kathleen, we heard from one of the demographics you write are targeted by the blood plasma industry for donations: college students, also working poor in often in Rust Belt communities, so-called, often here in the Midwest. Can you talk about that other target market?
Yeah, definitely. So I spent a lot of time in Flint, Michigan, which is representative of the demographic you just mentioned. So a lot of people in, I would say, what used to be good working class jobs in working class communities no longer earn quite enough money to have as good a life as they maybe would have 30 years ago. So a lot of the people I met are working in industries and professions full time that should be enough to get by, but they're not quite enough. And so they will sell plasma to supplement a full-time job. I spent time with a local news reporter in Michigan who does this, and several other local news reporters as well. It's actually become pretty common for people to do this to not only buy necessities, but also to have a little bit of fun. So I've met people who sell plasma to save up to pay for a vacation that they might not otherwise be able to take. So it's these little kind of, I guess, the good parts of middle class life that we used to be able to get by working one job, you know, where you could raise a family. That's just become so difficult in the United States now, as incomes have not kept pace with the cost of living, and especially in this era of inflation that we're in right now. So it's very common. Plasma centers are very common in the Rust Belt, in the Midwest, in the South, in places where there is more economic hardship, and I would say larger populations. So you might have a small town somewhere that's poor, but you won't find a plasma center there. What the more popular place would be is a city with a larger population, but a larger percentage of that population who is living on the financial margins. So one of the things that surprised me going into this reporting, I really thought it was going to be only the poorest of the poor needed to do this, but it has become something attached to middle-class life and what we used to think of as middle-class income. So you have poor people, you have working poor doing it, but you have a lot of people who are on paper considered middle-class and okay, and they still need this to supplement the salaries that they're making.
Talking to Kathleen McLaughlin about her new book on the blood plasma industry. It's called Blood Money. Back to your calls now with Austin in La Crosse. Austin, hi. What did you want to bring up?
Hi there. Actually just driving by one of these facilities. I have a question regarding if we have concerns about the ethics of such a market as it's built right now, what does the alternative look like? And I guess I'm also just curious if the journalist here has any information about the difference between like blood banks and plasma centers. If I've donated plasma at a blood bank before, and if there's a difference between where my plasma would go from one place and the other.
Interesting questions, Austin. Thanks for the call, Kathleen.
Thanks, Austin. So first, to your first question, I don't think there is any chance this industry is going away. The United States has kind of quietly made a decision that we will allow people to be paid for plasma, and I don't think that's going anywhere. My kind of idea about this after doing all of this reporting is I think people should be paid more. And I think the system should be transparent. I think Jeremy mentioned before this thing about, you know, incentives and coupons and things like that. Why don't we have a system that pays people a guaranteed amount every time? And beyond that, I think we are asking a lot by trying to get people to donate plasma twice a week. It's a huge commitment of time. It's a huge commitment of health. And your second question about blood banks, yes, you can donate plasma at places like the Red Cross. Those mainly go into, so there is purely altruistic nonprofit plasma donation, just like blood donation. Those donations of plasma would be more inclined to go into a hospital setting where the medication is made. The plasma industry tends to own the for-profit plasma industry tends to own its own collection centers. So for example, the medication I take is made by a company that owns hundreds of plasma centers across the US. So they own the product from beginning to end, if that makes sense. If you're donating at a place like the Red Cross, it's more apt to end up in the same place that blood would end up, which is nonprofit industry. So in a hospital setting or a medication that is made into those kinds of products. The other piece of that is more plasma is collected through the for-profit companies than through the nonprofit. So if you donate plasma at the Red Cross, you're limited to doing that to 13 times a year. If you donate plasma at a for-profit center, you can do it 104 times a year. So you can kind of just see from those rules that there's a lot more plasma coming in through the for-profit system than there is the nonprofit.
Thanks for that call. John joins us now in Appleton. John, hello.
Yes, hi. I used to donate plasma back in the 90s. I did it twice a week. And I often thought, I was underpaid for my time. Because as they say, you're not there selling a product or whatever. You're donating your time. And the thing that irritated me was a small person of 120 pounds would donate 660 milliliters of plasma, where me, I'm a big man, and I would donate 880 milliliters of plasma, and I was paid the same amount as that other person, which would take about 45 minutes for them and closer to an hour for me.
Interesting, John. Thanks for sharing that experience. He was maxing it out there, Kathleen.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I think he's exactly right. It's just, if we're going to do this, and I don't see a way that you can roll it back, you can't, you know, there's millions of people who sell plasma every year. You can't ban it overnight. If we're going to do this, I do think we just need to be more transparent and fair about what we pay people. I mean, a lot of the people I've interviewed have told me, yeah, it only takes, the actual donation process only takes 45 minutes to an hour, but it eats up a half a day where they can't work. And a lot of people get tired afterwards. And so they need to go home and go to sleep. You know, there's a lot involved in this. And so to expect people to do it twice a week for a fuzzy payment system is not fair, I don't think.
Thanks a lot for that call. And Kathleen, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
That's Kathleen McLaughlin, journalist and author of the new book, Blood Money, The Story of Life, Death, and Profit Inside America's Blood Industry. Thanks for your great call. So many people we didn't have time to get to, but you can share your story if you'd like over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We have a conversation set up over there.